Closed. Well then, let's start. Oh, do you want to give an introduction? Well, so I'm just going to introduce myself. Most of you probably already know me. My name is Ralf Böhme from the summer team, and I work for Senet. And I'm going to give a presentation about persistent handles. Not really persistent handles in general, but adding persistent handle support to Samba. The presentation is called Persistent Handles Approaches. It was initially called Persistent Handles DB Rep Approaches, but as you will see on the outline, this kind of morphed into we have more approaches than one. We had DB Rep Approach, now we have a bunch of them, how we can implement persistent handles in Samba. So, first, a brief recap on persistent handles. What are persistent handles actually good for? Persistent handles are an SMB3 feature. So, suppose you have an SMB3 connection between an SMB client and a server. The client opens a file. The server maintains file handle state like locks and share mode and leases. And now something bad happens. Ouch! The server crashes. So, pretty simple, without persistent handles, this state is just lost. It is gone. On a Windows server or on any Linux server, if the server crashes, any open files, any associated handle state is gone. So, with persistent handles, the server somehow persists the state. That's all he has to do. And then, the client is guaranteed to be able to re-establish his file handles once he reconnects, within bounds and timeouts, of course. And the next one is very, very important. While the client is actually disconnected and reconnecting to the server and hasn't yet re-established the connection, the client is guaranteed that the server blocks any concurrent access to the file. Any other client that tries to open the file, the server just says, go away. This is a little bit simplified, but more on that later. So, what are we going to do in Samba? Two things. We have to persist the file handle state, and we have to protect disconnected file handles from concurrent access. A few words on actual real-world use cases of persistent handles. These are the actual recommendations from Microsoft, I believe. In theory, any workload would benefit from the additional guarantees, but maintaining the handle state on persistent storage is potentially or realistically an expensive operation because the state has to be flushed to stable storage. So this is only really recommended for certain workloads with low metadata overhead, like Hyper-V, MS SQL, and stuff where you essentially the client opens a file once and be done. And then it does I/O on the file, but it doesn't cause any a lot of metadata operations on the server and on the connection. So, sorry? And no sharing eventually, yes. So this is really not recommended for, I picked up that term just recently, the information worker workloads, which means MS Office. So, persistent handles in Samba. How do we get there? I think last year I started kind of private research. I found the topic very interesting and challenging. I'm thinking about what could we do in Samba to get there. The basic ideas I kept moving in my head were support for persistent handles would be only for certain workloads, similar to what MS does. Storing the persistent handle can be slower than for normal file handles. That was one of the basic ideas and one of the assumptions. Ignore the problem of access via other protocols or local access on the server. So this is about the protection of files with disconnected handles from access from other clients. So the idea was just ignore the problem that you have a user that SSH to the server and does nasty things directly on the server. The idea was just to simplify enough and ignoring this this class. And then, of course, Zamba already has a clustered DB storage layer with strong persistent guarantees. Unfortunately, this this storage layer can be very slow. But maybe somehow we could use it. So the basic idea that emerged was somehow just combine a so-called volatile and a persistent database. Just use the volatile database for non-persistent handles and use a persistent database for persistent handles. And then allow choosing the persistency property on a per record basis, based on a flag, a new flag, dbwrap persistent, for example, when fetching and storing records. Over time, two designs emerged. One was to do it in dbwrap. I'll explain in a bit what dbwrap is. And another design emerged just on Tuesday, together with Amitai. Let CTDB do it.
Or some beers.
Or some beers. Or green tea, if you like.
Yeah, that's
the transfer. Okay. So first, the dbwrap approach. Let's look at that. So a brief overview of what is dbwrap? Gesundheit. So Samba uses TDB databases to store various internal bits. TDB itself is a fast key value store, shared memory, mapped hash table with chaining. And the TDB API can be tricky when it comes to locking. TDB is not clustered, so for clustering, CTDB was invented like 10 years ago, maybe? Or longer, I guess, yeah. So a sane API was needed to abstract away the locking and non-clustered versus clustered use case. That was dbwrap, an API with backends like TDB, CDB, and an in-memory red black tree based in-memory table database. And then, of course, dbwrap is used by SMBD in a bunch of places. Okay, this is now few words on the database models, volatile and persistent. I don't know if most of you already have been to Amitai's talk. He explained that as well, probably better than this. He had a nice table. I should have taken it out from your presentation and put it in here. So we have a persistent mode of operation on databases and volatile. Persistent essentially just enforces transaction. It is essentially ACID compliant. But it is slow. So you looked up the numbers. We looked the numbers on Tuesday. So it's something like 100 database operations per second, or was it? So it's some number. It's just way slower than the volatile database access model. Way slower. Yes. Yes. Yeah. So the volatile model is faster and. Yeah, the interesting thing is it's like ACID without D, so it's not durable. So if you have a database with records in there and currently no one has the database open, you can have multiple openers from multiple processes on a database, and the first opener of such a volatile database essentially wipes the database and all records are gone. Which would, for example, also happen if you have a Samba cluster and the whole cluster for some reason crashes and you have to reboot it, all your precious data and the volatile databases are gone. So Samba uses a bunch of these volatile databases for the file handle stage. Lock in TDB, SMB, XSFO, Open Global TDB, the byte range lock TDB, BR lock TDB, leases TDB. And so volatile DBs can lose records, which is not very good for persistent handles. So what are we going to do? Remember, the idea for a new design was to somehow combine such a volatile and a persistent database into something new that supports per record persistency. So I've added a flag to dbopen, dbwrap flag per record persistency, which requests from, this is dbopen is of course the function to initially open a database. And if you pass that flag, you tell dbwrap, hey, I want the possibility to decide on a per record basis if I want a record to be persistent or volatile. dbwrap then does its thing. So when the database opener wants to fetch a record, there's a new flag to dbwrap fetch log, which is the core function by which you get records out of the dbwrap abstracted databases, dbwrap persistent. The implementation kind of works like this. You always fetch and log, thereby, the record from the volatile DB first, always. While holding that log, you don't really use the record yet. If the caller passes dbwrap persistent, only then, also look in the persistent database. If there's a record, just return that. Otherwise, look into the actual, into the volatile database, and if there was a record, return that. So for the records stored in the persistent database, the volatile database kind of just serves as a distributed log manager on the persistent database. dbwrap fetch log itself takes no long-lived low-level log on the persistent database, which means this ensures that concurrent dbwrap record store operations don't deadlock in the transaction commit on the persistent database. Hopefully, fingers crossed, I need Volker to to look into this carefully, but it should work, I think. So how does storing records work? dbwrap record store also has a new flag, dbwrap persistent. Without dbwrap persistent, just store it in the volatile database. No change to current behavior. If the caller passes dbwrap persistent, store it in the persistent database. And then an interesting tweak is just when changing the property, when going from volatile to persistent, when there was a volatile record in the database and then the caller just suddenly passes the persistence flag, in order to avoid the problem that you have a record for one key, you have a record in the volatile and the persistent database, to keep that consistent and ensure that you always have a record in either of them. Deleted in the database from the previous state. So this is tricky now. Key space, and it's mostly really about it's an implementation detail. It's mostly about performance. Ideally, the key space of persistent and non-persistent records would be strictly disjoint, so that you have, when you have one key, dbwrap fetch locked will only ever call dbwrap fetch locked with either with passing dbwrap persistent or without in the fetch locked, but not going from one to the other. Because this would allow the implementation to optimize. Sorry, this is falling off my ear. That would allow an optimization in the implementation and would give unchanged DB access semantics and performance for shares where you, I mean, in the end, we want to use this for persistent handles, and if the admin doesn't enable it on a share, ideally, performance on file opens and access to the file system or SMB would be unchanged. So the problem for locking TDB, the key is device and INode number. So suppose an admin configures two shares sharing the same path. We have two shares, foo and bar, both sharing path. And the one says persistent handles, yes, and the other says persistent handles, no. Jeremy, there's a question.
Can we just disallow that and say,
yeah, if you... Well, I was saying, oh my, who would do that? But... Ask that guy. So he was complaining. My idea was just to
say no, don't do
just
that.
Say if you've no,
got,
yeah.
If you've got persistent handles on one, you get persistent handles on all of them.
People might just do that. So, yeah.
But I mean,
we could add a runtime check that enumerates all shares and when you load
any particular share, you just check. Because.
Yeah. It's really stupid. Yeah. I mean, my idea was this kind of. I think it's on the next slide to make this like an option, because. Yeah. So suppose you have a disconnected persistent handle on a file share foo, and as it's disconnected, you must protect access to this file over SMB from another client. But with this configuration, clients would be able to access the file via the other share. We have to deal with this as well for the Open Global TDB, not for security reasons or anything else, just to get the semantics right. But we could partition the ID space there as well.
So is there? Can you just go back a little? So because the share names have to be different, isn't there a way that we could essentially just extend the hash to include a hash of the name, share name?
No, because you would not have the protection between the shares. And it's actually not that hard to implement that correctly. So it's not worth to do any protection.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just about if we must support this, yeah, and must prepare for such a configuration. We just always pass dbrep persistent to dbrep fetch locked, because that consistently looks in both databases. The problem is it just has a small performance hit, because you first fetch lock from the volatile, and then you have to look into the persistent one. Well, I mean, this is actually the kind of dbrep implementation I've been working on over the past months. I've been talking to Metzer about this a few weeks ago, and he had different ideas how we could solve this within dbrep. But did it require CDDB support in some sense? Yeah, also. So, yeah. I think maybe if we make it an option, defaulting to safe behavior, for example, that might work. So there was the dbrep approach. Any questions so far? Anything else? No, because otherwise I'm just going to briefly present the very hot and new dbrep approach, which was invented on Tuesday. So we add a new database model to CityDB proper with support for per record persistency. We get that by adding a new control that is used by clients to open a database, tell CDDB to open the database and use a certain model. And by using a new control, attached per record persistent, CDDB does its magic. In the end, in the implementation, it will also open a volatile in the persistent database, much like I've done it in my dbrep design and implementation. Yeah, so, okay, storing records. So how would it work? Store volatile records only in the volatile database. Store persistent records first in the persistent database. That's just the normal behavior for persistent records. As usual, this is on all nodes then for the persistent database. And then in the volatile database. So this means a record where the caller asked for this per-record persistency. Yeah. Fetching records is the genius idea from Amitai. If we're not the demaster of a record, so hopefully anyone who attended Amitai's talk is familiar with these terms now. If you're not the demaster of a record, ask the LMaster, just as usual. If the LMaster has no record for the key, which would, for example, happen if there was just no record stored by the key, yeah? Check the persistent database. And if there's a record, just copy that to the volatile database and hand it off to the one who requested the record. We need a few tweaks to recovery. Recover the persistent database first. That's a usual recovery procedure. Then recover the volatile database. Collect all records from all nodes. Check if there are any records in the persistent database. Update the, I think it's in-memory state at that point, right?
Doesn't matter.
Yeah. You do it.
Temporary.
Okay. Ah, yes, yeah, right. And then push it to all nodes, as usual. Yeah, that would be the hot new CDDB thingy that Amitai is going to give us next week.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So don't we need both? Because we can't enforce CDDB running for a standalone file server that wants persistent
this
handles.
This is not persistent handles. It's not really for standalone file servers. This is a cluster thingy. I think you only, really in production, you only want a CA, continuously available files, persistent handles to grant on a clustered file server that's actually an active scale-out file server like Windows does it. I think does Windows grant persistent handles on a non-clustered? No. No. I mean, we could do this for internal testing. Yeah. I've actually, in dbwrap, I also implemented this in dbwrap TDB. So for testing, we can do it on a standalone file server that is not clustered.
There's no occasion where you might want persistence on a... If you reboot your server and you want to keep the client running while... If the server's going to come back really quickly, especially if it's a container in the cloud or something...
Yeah, but that's a promise. That's not a guarantee. The admin kind of shuts down the server and then, yeah, I'm going to start
well,
it up again in a few minutes.
You reboot it,
but,
you know.
But that's not really a guarantee, right? I mean, the reboot code hang and so forth. So
you reboot it, it comes back up, the client reconnects, it's transparent that it went down or it crashed.
Well, I mean, we can discuss this, but I think it doesn't really make sense, but...
I can see use cases where people might want to say, basically, I don't have a cluster, I just have a single file server, but I want this thing to be able to go down temporarily or lose connectivity, and you know.
Yeah.
Anyway,
we'd have to think about it.
Yeah. Well, this is true. Yeah.
Persistent gives you a stronger guarantee.
Yeah.
Yeah. But with durable are gone if you reboot the server.
Yeah.
Durables only survive a network disconnect.
I can see people.
Yeah, I mean,
once we have persistence, I can see people saying, "I only have one file server. I still want the persistence."
Yeah. I mean, currently locking TDB is not versioned like, for example, the records like SMBX, SFO, Open Global is. So we need to add versioning to locking TDB anyway as well.
Yes, we do.
Because the records are now persistent, so they're not gone anymore after you upgrade Samba. Yeah. Sorry.
Does Hyper-V still work without persistent handle support on the server?
Hyper-V still work without persistent handle support?
Hyper-V. So
yes, but I can't make sense out of the question. But I mean, at the moment, Hyper-V doesn't work at all with Samba, does it? Because we have no persistent handle support, does it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but it's...
Well, it works until something goes wrong.
Wrong, yeah.
People lie. I OEMs who shall remain nameless... have hacks that say, "Oh, we support persistence. Trust us. We're
yeah,
honest."
Of course. Yeah, I mean, it's a one line change to set that flag over the wire. But
yes,
yeah.
And Hyper-V runs fine at that point. But they are lying. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if the server doesn't support it, then normally Hyper-V will.
Well,
I mean, those vendors can still hack anything they want into the code. So
Hyper-V is a complicated example. It expects.
We've gone through this before, and it's described in this document called MSHVRS. It will attempt a persistent handle. If it doesn't get a persistent handle, it will attempt a durable handle. It has too many workarounds, basically. So you are not exactly sure what Hyper-V truly needs, but what it wants and the best configuration is a persistent handle. Hey, something comes to mind. A persistent handle would be very good for the in-place server upgrade, even in a standalone server, right? You could do a transparent upgrade, if you will, by just rebooting the
server. Yes. That would be a valid use case, yes. But Windows wouldn't support that, right?
It supports it on Windows, but only if it's clustered. You require the CA, and CA basically means I have a clustered file system on the back side of the server.
Yeah.
It's possible to create a cluster of one node, I guess, but nobody ever. That's a silly. You're asking for a ton of overhead for almost no benefit.
I think at least it needs to be either a failover cluster or a scalar cluster for persistent handles in Windows.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're both implemented in the cluster, and the failover cluster is the more sophisticated one. That's the CA version.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Small side note, mostly for Tom. Do we have any mechanism to publicize these liars? I mean, the implementations that tell something and actually do not support that, so that we know about them and public knows about them. Because just the other day, we found some NetApp SMB3.1.1 advertisement that doesn't support fetch and sieve cycles over it, even though it has advertised that.
People lie, Alexander. This, you know.
So,
you can't stop fake news,
we defer this discussion maybe? Because I really have a whole lot of stuff to cover. So
there's no logo program for SMB3.
Okay, thanks. Sorry. So persistent handles. Now the implementation I did on top of this DB web thingy. The current status is DB Web itself, it's 37 patches, so it's not that big. It's not only for the DB Web CityDB backend, how we call it. I also did it for DB Web TDB, so for the standalone file server use case that works. Patches for CityDB available from MHA next week. So the persistent handles implementation on top of DB Web are currently 103 patches, so it's getting quite large. Diffstat 109 files changed, more than 5,000 insertions, 769 deletions. So I'm also removing some stuff. Currently, I'm only opening locking TDB and SMB XSFO open global TDB with the new model per record persistency. Reconnect works in a sense that you have a clustered Zamba, you kill all nodes, restart. Client reconnects, I/O continues. Protecting disconnected handles should work. The code is there, but I haven't actually really tested it or written tests or anything for it yet. But actually, there should be tests that I've written last year that should catch that case, but I haven't run them. There's some code. It's not really rocket science. The check once all the other stuff is in place should work. Timeout and cleanup should work, which was a little bit more involved to get the Zamba cleanup D process and the scavenger, which are additional processes in Zamba that are used to, for the durable handles, cleanup and stuff, and for other state that might need cleanup after a process crashes, for example. I implemented the timeout and cleanup, but haven't really tested it. I think I once saw that SMB status works as well, and I think I once saw that I ran SMB status and I saw the open file handle. It even shows I'm a persistent handle. I waited a few minutes, and I think the open was gone, but I'm not sure. All patches, of course, still very much work in progress. And to be done, byte range locks. And record versioning and locking TDB, I mentioned that. And we need a shitload of tests for all this. And there are probably other stuff that is missing as well. How's my time? 50 minutes left? So, okay, I'm not too bad. So, let's have a demo. In order to save some time, I wanted to do a live demo, but I'm scared that this is going to take too long. So, I did a recording. And so, I prefer sharing the video with you. Is that the beginning? Yes. So, okay, on the left is a Windows 10 client. On the right is my shell to control three-node CDDB cluster running Samba with my persistent handles on top of DB rep patches. So let's start. Is that readable?
Yes.
Quite small. I didn't think of making it bigger while doing the recording. So it's an LXC three-node cluster. So currently all shut down. Starting them all. Look again, now they're running. So going to SSH to the first node, and CDDB doesn't start on boot of the LXC container, so I'm starting CDDB manually on all three nodes. Launching CDDB status, waiting for the cluster to become healthy. Takes a few seconds. A few more seconds. Okay, we're there. Cluster's healthy. So, moving over to the Windows client. Connecting to the share, there is one big file, which is something like 100 megabytes. The network connection between the Windows client and the server is rate limited. Otherwise, the 100 megabyte copy would just whoosh. So I wouldn't have time to really stop the cluster. So the copy is humming along. So on the server, I'm running SMB status. Let's pause that for a moment. Oh, it's too late now. Yeah, I think I just wanted to highlight that the Windows client connected to node 0, which I'm now going to shut down. Stop node 0, right? So now, as you see on the left, copy isn't progressing anymore. So firing up Wireshark on the Windows client to watch the Windows client desperately trying to reconnect. And on the other side, I have CDDB status running again. And I think it's not yet healthy again and running and okay, because there's a get interface failed. I think we have to wait a little bit more till the recovery really kicks in and runs. Okay, now it's okay. Yeah, I saw this problem several times that you start CDDB status on a node that is okay, not the one that I shut off, and it can't really connect.
So CDDB status collects information
from all nodes, yeah.
So if one node is gone,
it takes some time. Hasn't yet. Yeah, yeah. That should explain it. Thanks. So CDB is healthy on the right side, and voila, on the left side, the Windows client was able to reconnect, and the copy continues. Looks like I have something more to show there. Okay, we're now connected on node 1. Looking at the open file with SMB status, you'll notice this new row, which isn't present in upstream, SMB status, PH for persistent handle. We have one persistent handle. All right, isn't that magic? Okay, so back here. There we go. So now we've seen two approaches to base persistent handle support in Zamba on top. One was DBWrap, the other CDB, and we have another one. And this was invented a little bit earlier than Tuesday. This is from last Friday, actually, or maybe, yeah, where I kept thinking. The DBWrap and also the CDB approach, they're essentially the same in that sense because you have this possibility of storing results persistently on request. It's quite heavyweight. It persists more bits than actually needed. And then it took me some time to fully understand the implications of a particular Windows scale-out server behavior. Because Windows cheats. Windows doesn't grant write or handle leases on a scale-out cluster. So this is a note for Metzer. I don't know if you already talked to... You have the answer? So maybe I don't want to know the answer. Because if the answer is that Windows does grant, a newer version does grant write or handle leases, then I have a problem. No. Oh. So Windows doesn't grant write or handle leases on a scale-out cluster. Scale-out cluster in Windows lingo means it's an active cluster. So you have a clustered file system that is actively shared from more than one node, at least two. By comparison, the older cluster feature from Zamba was the failover cluster, which was just active-passive. So clustered Zamba is scale out in that terms. And not granting write or handle leases greatly simplifies the implementation. Because so when we get an SMB2 create request on a file, we have to check, we gave the client the guarantee we are going to protect your precious files. So if he's disconnected, we have to check. Is there a disconnected handle on this file? And if there's any, we just return and his status file not available. Go away. Nothing else. No need for any fancy lease break, delaying, blocking, or anything. So I thought, hey, in that sense, we might only need to store not the full state that we currently have in the locking TDB and in the open global TDB. Can't this be somehow stored somewhere else, separately, in some other way. In a way that, ideally, for example, the locking TDB becomes completely redundant. We don't need any per-record persistency on the locking TDB. So I then thought, hey, the SMB2 reconnect request from a client, the durable handle V2 reconnect context, the create also contains the path of the file. The DH2C context contains the file ID, which would be used in the durable handle V2 or in the durable handle reconnect. So we have two things. We have the file ID and we have the path. Couldn't we fetch the state somewhere from, anywhere, just using the path we get in the reconnect? Using the
quick comment, Ralph. How does this interact with home shares? You might want to make sure it's the complete path.
It's home shares. Yeah, no persistent handles on home shares, probably.
Oh, okay.
Persistent handles on shares for Hyper-V and MS SQL.
Okay.
Yeah. Application that falls into that category.
It's dynamic. Basically, it's not just home shares. It's dynamic shares.
Yeah.
Any share where the
make
path
sure
can
that you don't grab persistent handles on any of this crazy stuff that should be removed from Zamba anyway.
Okay.
Because it adds too much complexity. That's at least my...
It was very useful originally. So
you didn't have
to create a million shares. Okay, all right. So you would restrict it to... The other thing you could do is use the complete path, because the complete path is including the expanded share, because you know what share it's coming in as, right?
Yeah, of course.
So you could just...
We know the share path, we know the path from the client.
Rather than saying just use the path given by the client, if you use the complete path, you then could make it work on dynamic.
If that would work for this dynamic file checker there, because I'm going to use the full path anyway, what I'm going to do.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah, the key, it's a file. So yeah, why not just tuck the state to a file as an additional extended attribute? Yeah. So that made me thinking. So I just quickly sketched an IDL for storing the persistent handle state as an array of persistent handles as an extended attribute. This is for sure not the final version. It was just something I quickly sketched, and in order to, I thought I have 3 days' time, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So I quickly went ahead and sketched an API. Three functions, SMB, VFS, persistent store, check file, and reconnect. How would that be used? When processing a create with a durable handle v2 request, that requests a persistent handle, that's missing there, we trigger a call to this persistent store function, which does its magic. We call SMB VFS persistent check file in openfile nt create under the share mode lock, which is important to be atomic, to block access to 3 minutes, oh my god, to block access to files with disconnected persistent handles. Then we have the reconnect, so I'm speeding up a little bit. We have the reconnect and so forth, so it's beautiful. Simple so far, but unfortunately, there's this paragraph in the MS-SMB2 spec, and that's the one thing I wanted to discuss with Tom. I already asked him yesterday. Hopefully I can discuss this with him today. SMB2335912 handling the durable handle to reconnect create context. The server must look up an existing open in the open global table by doing a lookup with the file ID persistent portion of the create context. So this strictly does not allow just using the path from the create reconnect request. So that would be the interesting question. Can't we just do it? Would it work? Would there be any problems? And so forth. We'd still need a persistent SMB accessor for open global TDB. We could use the new DB web backend or CDB support just for that one. Or just do it explicitly in our SMB XSFV open C implementation in the file. So then, but the $1 million question is, could we even do without this SMB XSFV open global TDB opening with per record persistency support? Well, yeah, we could just ignore what Microsoft specs and use the path from the SMB2 create reconnect to fetch the extended attribute. So what I'd suggested earlier, that would be the way out of that. So with that, we wouldn't need any support with fancy per record persistency databases at all. Yeah, sure, we can store the number, but the requirement is that you must be able to fetch from somewhere with the key, the file ID, which you don't have. We can store it, for sure. We can store it in the extended attribute, which I'm doing in the IDL for the extended attribute. Yeah, but we can't fetch the record with that key. Yeah. Byte range lock is needs a little bit more thinking. Could maybe store it in the extended attribute as well. Traverse file systems to get a list of persistent handle extended attributes is not really practical, so that means no tool to store to list stored persistent handles that are somewhere in your file system in extended attributes. So that's kind of a problem that Metze disliked, but yeah, what can you do? So brief outlook. I think maybe the DB Rep approach that is kind of working, might be good for continuing to prototype the persistent handles implementation on top. In a final version, once we get the CDB implementation for Nimetile, we'll switch to use that, and that will be the one maybe that we will be shipping.
Well, we need more. We need a little bit of stuff from the DBRAP also, because all the flags for DBRAP.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. Yeah. Of course. The API changes. Yeah. But we don't need the fancy implementation that I've fact together. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. We need that. Of course. So I'd do more research on the VFS approach. Reconnect already works there, and I think that's the one thing that I'd like to see. Maybe edit in parallel, or I think this really needs more discussion in the team with anyone who's interested in this. Sorry? Yes, you're welcome. So yes, at the end we have the end. So thank you for listening and any questions? Is there more questions?
What exactly is the difference between durable handles and persistent handles, and also in comparison to resilient handles?
I completely skipped resilient handles because I think Microsoft now skips resilient handles as well, so which leaves durable handles and persistent handles. I can explain what resilient handles are if you're interested, maybe in private conversation. Durable handles are kind of... I'm not sure if it's where does it strictly follow from the specs, but at least in the Samba implementation, it's only for surviving a network disconnect. So it doesn't survive if the server crashes, for example, the process or the whole server or anything. It just assumes that the client, the network cable is unplugged or anything, client loses the connection. The server reacts on notices the that the connection is gone, and it does some magic to ensure that some state is also stored on disk. So the client, when he reconnects, is able to restore the handle. But durable handles, I think it's also by design. It can't work. Don't survive if the server crashes or the cluster crashes and you rebuild the whole thing. Then durable handles are gone. So you have to. It's not a strict guarantee. Durable handles is like kind of best effort.
So the best approach,
Yes.
So you get a path and a handle, and you talk to the XADA, right?
Yes.
So you could report the XADA from the path. Can't you just then check that the handle is...
Yes, of course. Yeah, that's what I'm doing. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Let the spec be spec. No? Yeah. But I wanted to ask Tom if there are any reasons for why this might be in the spec or...
I know that the Windows buffer cache is indexed by path name, so I'm very surprised if this didn't work, because there's no aliasing of path name.
Right. Yeah.
The buffer cache is definitely indexed by path.
Okay.
One
thing is if we don't have a persistent SMB XSFO Open Global ID, because we must make sure that we don't reuse the file IDs, right? And we currently generate them randomly and then store them in the database. And then when we regenerate random, then we check that the number isn't already assigned.
The other idea that I was suggesting to Jeremy was that the server's choice of the persistent file handle is its own. So you can hash the file name and make that the persistent file name. If you were sufficiently unique and confident that that was...
Yeah, we could do even better, because the file ID is 64 bits, so we could just use a timestamp.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, I'm far too jet-lagged to give you a...
To give you a...
authoritative answer. It would be a good thing to talk about with some of the file system developers as well as the SMB developers later on.
Okay.
So
there's another talk. I think we have
to
the discussion.
If you want to pitch this to me, I'm going to be up in Redmond the week after next. I can hopefully talk to people about this. So I would love to see this code. So give me a private branch and I'll mess with it.
It's on. It's
Point me at the branch.
Forgot to show the links. It's on GitHub.
Yeah. Well. Giving out the branch, we can all test it.